Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years. He knows his stuff. If you've listened to this program before, you know it is an education. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also check in online and visit the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, and you can see all the ways you can get in touch with us on the World Wide Web right there. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Gordon, welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's our final Vox Pop before the big fun drive, don't you know?
Yeah, I always seem to be the last one before the fun drive.
Was it that way last time, too?
A whole bunch of times.
Well, we saved the best for last,
there,
right?
There you go.
Well, it's good to have you back. And, you know, driving on a day like today or yesterday, there's something really special about it. This is driving weather.
Phenomenal. And I was telling you when I came in, I was able to drive a convertible in today.
Nice.
And it was a great ride. You know, I'm not a major fan of convertibles.
Why is that?
Well, I ride motorcycle, and I do like to be outside in the elements and in the wind. But with a car, I don't know. I like the roof. I like the structure. I'm a little skittish about convertibles, probably more so safety. But
you mean for rolling them?
Yeah. You know, and I told my kids, I said, you guys will never have a convertible as far as if I'm providing a car.
Well, there are standards for roll bar and whatnot, right?
No. Some have roll bars and some have flip-up roll bars, but no, it's not a mandatory thing.
So, in other words, that's interesting. You'd think there'd be some safety requirement there.
You can tip over on the roof, and some cars are going to fare better than others if they have roll bar protection.
Interesting. Well, we have a full line of calls now. Let's go right to the phones. Joe in Middletown is on. Hi, Joe.
Yes, thank you. You know that fluffy corrosion stuff that builds up around your battery terminals, and I had like a very big large colony of it going on there. It looks like all fluffy white snow. Is that a symptom of anything?
Yeah, that's very common, Joe, and for some reason you find it on more so on some vehicles rather than others. And what it is and if you notice, it's almost always on the positive terminal. And what it has to do with is all batteries gas, when they're being charged and when they're operating, there's a chemical action going on in there, and it gives off vapors, very, very small amounts of vapors. And all batteries are vented. Some have a hose that vents them away, and others it just vents out of the top somewhere. And over a period of time, those vapors accumulate, and it's a kind of in a liquid form. And that's where the corrosion starts, and it really is corrosion. It's oxidation, and it's going to start eating things up. And periodically, the battery needs to be cleaned, washed down, neutralized, and get all that stuff off of there.
What do you neutralize it with?
Well, you can buy a product at any auto parts store.
Okay.
And it comes in a spray bottle.
Clean it with that?
Yeah, and what that does is it's base to offset
counteract the
acid.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And it turns a weird color, and you scrub it out and wash it away. And ideally, you want to take the terminals off and clean everything off of them. And that's all you really need to do.
It can affect your ability to start the car on a cold day if you have too much of that corrosion.
Oh, yes. It'll breach the connection from the battery to the car, and you won't start.
Can I ask you a question about oil?
Sure.
I read the owner's manual. It says they don't want you mixing viscosity. So, like, between oil changes, if you're going to top off, like you're down a quart, how important is it to make sure that you remember you took a record of if they put 5W-30 in there, or now you're going to add 10W-40? Is it really that bad to mix these viscosities?
No, it's not bad at all. In fact, let's say you start out with 10W-30 motor oil. After that oil is near the end of its life in your engine, let's say you've gone 3,000 miles, 4,000 miles, the viscosity of that oil tends to flatten out, and eventually it ends up being closer to 30 weight straight without any ability to go thinner. So, no, if you need a quart of oil on a trip and you're not putting the exact same viscosity in it, it's not going to be an issue.
Okay.
Okay.
Joe,
right,
thanks
thank
a lot.
You.
Appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is here to answer your automotive questions. 1-800-348-2551. Joe in Kingston, you're on.
Yes, Gordon. I've bought a 98 Lexus 350, and it didn't come with a wireless remote. What are my options for getting one?
You mean to for remote opening of the doors and locks and that kind of thing?
That's correct.
Yeah. There's a couple of ways to do that. You could get it directly from Lexus, and there is a method to program those remotes to the vehicle. And I'm not sure on your car, but in some cases, let's say you lost one or one of them's broken or missing or smashed up, you can buy an extra one and you yourself can program it in. There's a procedure of how to do it. If you don't have any, I'm not sure if it requires a trip to the dealer, but your other option is also a locksmith, an automotive locksmith. We've got one in our area that can provide you with, or can provide the owner with remotes and make them work, and you leave there with the remotes operating.
Wow.
So those are your
any
two
car?
Options. Well, almost any car. I mean, if you went in there with a very exotic car, that would probably be tough to do. But you know, run-of-the-mill cars or conventional, I think you're okay there.
And you don't need a VIN or anything?
Not in most cases. Now, if you got really late model, it could be an issue with coding or programming for theft, because there's a lot of cars with keyless starts now.
Yeah.
So you can't duplicate that one particular fob, or they'd be stealing the car left and right. So,
yeah.
But if it's a car that has a key, I think you'll be fine doing it that way.
Spectacular. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. We appreciate it.
You're most welcome. Stay well.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And, you know, I've been looking to get another fob for my car, second fob.
Yeah.
And I was under the impression I would have to take it to the dealer to have it programmed.
I don't think you do. In fact, General Motors was one of the easier ones to do. And you'd get the second fob, and you had to simultaneously push two of the buttons together.
Oh, there's a method like
that. I think in your owner's manual, it will even tell you how to program extra remotes into your system. And I think on your car, it's not a big deal.
Interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. Jerry, somewhere. Where are you calling from, Jerry?
Hi, Falls.
Hi, nice to have you here. You're on.
Yeah, my question is, I have a Honda Accord 94 EX with an automatic transmission. The car has approximately 353,000 miles on it.
Wow.
It's a great one. I was told by a mechanic friend of mine that my transmission orifice screens are semi-clogged, and that's why I get my stall when I put it in drive. I got to wait an extra 2-3 seconds, and then I'll feel the jolt, and then I'll give it the gas. So what I've been doing is I've been changing the transmission fluid, the two quarts, dropping it out, probably like once every 2 months. It only costs $17 and 15 minutes of my time. And it'll shift better. It'll shift smoother. The stall will go away for just a little while. And then, of course, then it comes back. So my question is, do I ever gamble and go for a full transmission flush that'll include the torque converter, or just proceed the way I'm doing it? Because everyone tells me, with that kind of miles, if you put straight, fresh, new fluid, you probably blow the tranny.
Okay.
Well, that is an interesting consideration, because, you know, we've talked about this on previous shows, that in a high-mileage automatic transmission that's never been serviced and the oil or the transmission fluid is very dark and burnt, if you do a total flush, are you going to disturb a bunch of stuff in there and cause a problem you didn't have? And the answer is, it's definitely possible. But you've been draining and refilling yours very frequently. When you drain it, how clean is it looking nowadays?
I'll be honest with you. I mean, I think it's only 5.5 quarts, the entire system. So you're only probably able to get partial out of the pan.
Correct.
I'll tell you the truth. If I do it like, sometimes it's 4 months, I'll go.
Yeah.
And it's pretty damn black, I will admit.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right. Because
dirty.
Here's the thing. The idea is to change transmission fluid on certain vehicles that offer changes like yours, to do it very regularly throughout its life, so the fluid never really gets a chance to get dark. You're dumping out the debris and getting fresh fluid in there. And I know you're only doing it at 2 and 3 quarts at a time with your drain and refill, but Hondas have a different type of automatic. They're not quite the same as most automatic transmissions. There's a lot more gears going on in there. So I don't know if I would do a total flush, really, because you have so many miles on that car.
Yeah.
If you continue to drain and refill it like you're doing, you're eventually going to clean it up in small increments. And I would use that approach more so than doing a total flush at this point.
Hmm, interesting.
All right. Okay, answer my question. I'll just proceed with it the way it is because, again, when the transmission goes, that's the end of the car because, how many more miles can I get out of
it? It sounds like you've done remarkably well with it.
Jerry, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. 300+ thousand miles, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Not bad. Gordon Fricke is our guest. More with your automotive questions coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. 518-580-8080. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years. Now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. Oblong Books, presenting Pitchapalooza 2013 with the Book Doctors, today at 6 p.m. in Rhinebeck, RSVP required to pitch, oblongbooks.com. And Laurie Stillwell, CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond, StillwellCPA.com.
Well, as I mentioned at the top of the program, the fun drive starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. We hope you are with us for that. And if you want to start early, we'd love you to do that. It's at our website, wamc.org. You can put your contribution into our lockbox. Everything we raise online until day one begins counts on day one. We're at about just about 150,000 right now in the lockbox, which will count as we start the fun drive. That's over a day shaved off the drive. So that's pretty darn good. If you want to keep it going, we'd love to get your pledge early. 1-800-348-2551 is our number here. WAMC.org if you want to listen there or make your pledge. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we talk automotive maintenance and repair. And back to the phones we go. John and Canaan is up. John.
Yeah, Gordon. I've got a car with a 16,000 miles on it. It's a 1957 Willys, and those 16,000 miles have been put on largely at my farm in low gear. Car runs reasonably well, except that on startup and until it's warmed up, it's tending to buck quite a bit. If I accelerate it, it'll cough and choke like it just doesn't want to go. And if I gradually run the motor up and get it warm, it'll settle down and eventually perform normally. I've looked at the spark plugs, and they're fine. I've had the carburetor cleaned out and parts replaced. And I'm wondering whether those symptoms could be caused by a malaligned valve.
You're talking an engine valve.
Yeah, an engine valve.
Yeah. Is this Willys a four-cylinder?
Yes.
Yeah. This car, of course, I would guess in 1957, this has a manual choke. You have to pull a lever out.
That's right.
Okay.
Manual choke, manual throttle.
If you were to, I don't know if you've done this or not, but if you pull the choke out a little bit, does it cover up those symptoms and does it run okay? Have you ever tried that?
Yes, I have. And the answer is sometimes it does, but not always.
See, that's a great way of cars of that vintage to rule out a lean condition, a carburetor or fuel condition, by pulling the choke out a little bit, even though it's fully warmed up. And if the engine runs quite nicely with the choke partially out, you are compensating for a lean condition, which could be from a variety of things, but more than likely would be an intake gasket, intake manifold gasket, and or a base gasket at the carburetor. Because your mileage is quite low, although mileage and hours that it's been operated are two different things.
Right.
Has this thing been used a lot on your farm, or is it just periodically driven around?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, it's varied over the years. I'd say at the moment it's being used every week or so.
Yeah. I would be leaning towards, you know, of course, with a car like that, there's a lot of things that need checking and adjustment. ignition points.
The points have just been changed.
Okay. If you're fairly certain the ignition system is okay, and there's only one thing there that's very hard to test, and that's the ignition coil, unless it fails.
That's been checked, too. We went entirely through the ignition system very recently, and I know the ignition system's in good shape.
Well, this is what I would do. Have it warmed up and idling, and get a can of carburetor spray cleaner with a nozzle on the end, you know, a little straw that sticks out, and spray that around the base of the carburetor and see if the engine speeds up a little bit. See if you get a reaction. And then spray that nozzle. Does this car have an intake manifold that bolts to the cylinder head, or is it part of the head on that? Or don't you know?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, if it has a bolt-on manifold, spray around that also and see if the engine changes how it runs. And if it does, it's sucking in that carburetor cleaner and making the engine happy for a moment, and it'll raise the RPMs a little bit. And so you can spray around all your sources of vacuum, and you might have a vacuum leak somewhere. That's what I would be looking at if you think the rest of it's in pretty good shape.
Okay, so valves, stick away from that idea.
Well, you know, you could check the adjustment of those valves, of course. Car's really old. I would not rule that out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks very much. I appreciate your guidance.
Okay.
John, thanks a lot. What kind of car was that?
It's a Willys.
What is that?
Willys was a company that made cars, but they also produced Jeeps in World War II times. It was called the Willys Overland Company.
Now, if he needs to replace valves, I mean, can you get the parts?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, I hope he calls back next show. Mark in Albany, you're on. Mark.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call. A question for you. I have a Toyota Avalon. I believe it's 2003. And I got mixed opinions on changing of oil. Now, my maintenance required light is on, and that usually indicates that I have to change my oil. But I was recently informed that with the newer cars, where you used to have to change the oil every 2,000 miles or so, and now they're suggesting that you can let that go to 4,000 or 5,000. Is that correct or not correct?
Yeah, really good question. We hear from a lot of people that are a little confused on how often to change the oil. This part of the country, if you look in your owner's manual, it'll talk about normal driving conditions or severe driving conditions. And we really do live in severe territory. And that means seasonal changes, temperature changes, a lot of idling, stop-and-go driving if you're in the city at all. And that takes the oil change interval and usually cuts it in half.
Huh.
And a lot of times you'll see an interval of 7,500 miles as being normal or 6,000. So if you cut that in half, you're kind of around 3,000, which used to be the rule to change your oil every 3,000 miles, unless you're on a beautiful, easy commute. So depending on the type of driving you do,
I drive all over the Capital District for work, Kingston and back, and Poughkeepsie and back, and so I'm in my car all the time. But with my type of driving pattern, you would suggest every 3,000.
Well, you could probably bump up to 4,000 because you're doing a lot of highway driving in there.
Yes.
And a lot of oils today, whether you do it yourself or if you take it somewhere, a lot of them are a blended oil. There's more synthetics in there than there used to be, and they call it a synthetic blend.
Mm.
And that oil does have the capability of lasting longer. So I, you know, maybe try the 4,000-mile route.
All right.
Sounds like you're kind of in that realm.
Yep, that's pretty much what I'm looking at. Now, the car itself, because it's computerized, it doesn't know whether I'm at 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000. So the fact that I have my maintenance required light on should have nothing to do with, because I know with my sticker when I changed my oil last, when I should change my oil. Am I correct?
Yeah, I don't think your car has a smart system. Some do. Some sample the number of key cycles, the start and stops, and
right.
It takes into consideration your mileage and the type of driving you do, and then it turns the light on when it thinks it's ready.
Huh.
But I don't think your car. I think yours is more or less on mileage.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate the help.
Mark, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Lynn in New Ashford. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Terrific program.
Thank you.
I have a convertible that I'm getting ready to put away for the winter here in a month or so. But I want to put it on a trickle charge for the battery. And the trickle charge I have says it's good for ATVs, lawn tractors, and motorcycles. Will that be enough to keep it charged through the winter, or do I need something else?
Sure, that's a good question. Is that charger that you're referring to, is that a unit that's made to maintain the battery? Is it called a battery tender?
Yes, it's a tender.
Okay, because you definitely want one that monitors the voltage and doesn't charge all the time. You want it to only charge when necessary. So if you're putting a battery tender on that vehicle, that will handle it as long as you put that away fully charged. If you ask that tender to charge a stone dead battery, it could take it days, and it may not be able to bring a battery that's completely dead back. But that should work on your car because you're going to put that away in total running condition, so the battery will be basically at a normal charge.
Correct. So, and I can just leave that on all winter
Yep, long as it's a tender, long as it's okay to leave on all season. Just make sure that's what it is.
So it has technology that senses the full charge and lets it idle? And
yep, it watches the voltage and only adds current when necessary.
Okay.
Ah, terrific. Thank you so much. You've solved my problem.
What kind of convertible do you have, Lynn?
It's a BMW 323i from 98, so it's an older one.
Nice.
No roll bar.
No, that's one that didn't have one.
Well, you know, it's smart to keep that in the garage for the winter. Well, thanks for the call, Lynn.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go over to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're up.
All right. I got two questions for you.
Okay.
I've got daylight running lights for new cars. Are they required for all new cars?
Depends on the state, yeah?
Huh?
Depends on the state, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure because that daytime running light craze came on, I think, in the 90s, late 90s.
Yeah. And I thought it was 2004 or something that all cars had to have.
You know,
and they don't.
I don't know if it's mandatory or not. I believe it is in Canada, but I don't know about the U.S.
because in Canada, all cars have to have them.
But I'm not seeing all cars going down the road in daylight hours.
My problem is I got all the police cars don't use them. And I'm going, well, I thought all cars had to require them.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case. I think a lot of them come with them.
It's just extra.
I think so.
Huh. Okay, my next question is, I've got a 2007 Colorado pickup. What should I be thinking about maintenance for?
How many miles are on it now?
100,000, almost 100,000, 97,000 or something.
Is that a four-wheel drive?
Yes.
So it's a six-cylinder engine?
It's a five.
Five-cylinder, yes. Yep, you had a five, and I think you had a six-cylinder option on those as well.
And you can also tell me how I get that oil change light off, if you know real quick.
What General Motors was using for a long time, and I'm not sure if your truck has this system, but it's super easy to tell. Turn the key to the run position, but don't start the engine.
Yeah.
And then
tap what?
Push the accelerator pedal to the floor.
And
release it three times.
Okay. Yeah. I got you.
You don't have to.
I sort of remembered. They told me. I went to a dealer last time this happened, and they told me what to do, and then I forgot.
Yeah.
All right. So, generally, what maintenance should I be thinking about? I don't want to spend a lot of money, but then I should be thinking about, it's got 100,000 miles on it. What should I do?
Well, what I would do is look at the maintenance manual, if you have it, that came with the truck.
Yeah, which I do have.
Yeah, and I would do everything they recommend in there, because the manufacturer doesn't overdo required maintenance. It's the stuff that they recommend is very important to do when they say to do it.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes when you buy a car from a new car dealer, they make their own maintenance plan. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I bought this used.
Some of those are really overboard. But always refer to the manual that came with the vehicle. And if they say change the transmission fluid, do it. If they say change the brake fluid, I would do everything that they say in there, because you will get the longest maintenance-free, breakdown-free life of your vehicle if you do that.
Oh, okay. All right. So just go ahead and just go by the owner's manual.
And it's not going to be a massive list. Your engine doesn't have a timing belt. You know, there's a lot of maintenance items that you don't need to do on that particular vehicle.
That's good.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for all your information. Thank you.
We appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon. Garden Show was yesterday.
That's right.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's the automotive show. 1-800-348-2551. Don in, says Tech Lake. Where are you, Don?
Yeah, Southern Adirondacks, Ray.
Oh, okay. Very good. Nice. What lake is it?
Peck. P-E-C-K.
It says Tech. Yeah, it's Peck Lake. Yes, of course. I know it well. All right, you're on.
Yeah, the question is, my wife has a 2007 Camry hybrid. It's the first year they came out, so they were very careful on guaranteeing the batteries past 100,000 miles. Well, she's got 120 on it, and it runs just fine. Gordon, what's your experience on how long you think these batteries should hold up? And she's a normal driver, half city, half highway.
Sure. The batteries in the hybrids have proven to be extremely reliable, and they're lasting a lot longer than they predicted they would. And I thought it was a 10-year warranty, but it does end at 100,000 miles.
I believe that it does. I haven't checked the manual.
Yeah.
I'm going by memory.
Yeah, yeah.
But we figured our return on investment on $2.50 gas and 100,000 miles, and of course, we've done very well with that.
Yeah. Those vehicles, I believe, will give you warnings in their self-diagnostic systems as to the battery conditions. So I don't think you have to do anything.
Just keep driving until you get a warning.
I think so. And you could double check with a Toyota dealer. But I know that these batteries are holding up extremely well, better, longer than they thought they would.
Well, Toyota dealers warn you that you ought to trade in it for a new one.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's what they like to convince you
sure.
to do. But I think if you called the service department and just said, hey, what's the experience with these batteries, I think they'd tell you what's going on there.
Okay, well, she's got one of the originals, so it's at least, and the Camry engine is bigger than the Prius engine.
Yeah.
And the final question is, if the batteries were to fail without notice, it'll run just fine on the four-cylinder engine, am I correct?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think you're going to be stranded. And those batteries aren't going to just drop dead on you. They're just going to diminish, and you're going to know it. But they're not.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to leave you on the side of the road.
Well, I thank you very much. And by the way, Ray, I'm a big fan. Keep up the good work.
Don, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Now explain this to me, Gordon, about hybrids. I've only driven my wife's aunt's hybrid, and it's like a spaceship to me.
Yeah.
It's a Prius, and I didn't even know how to start it at first.
I know.
And then she, at one point, needed a jump start. And I said, okay, I'll come it over. And I couldn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Is there a separate battery to start and a separate battery that
manages
the electrical motor?
Yeah, there's a what you'd consider a conventional 12-volt battery that starts the gasoline engine.
Where is that? I couldn't find it.
No, it's a secret.
Is it?
Yeah. No, that battery is in a Prius. I believe it's buried in the trunk.
Ah.
But you don't have to go there to jump start it.
There's, oh, really?
There's a little post under the hood. You have to flip up a little lid by the fuse box that allows you to hook jumper cables up under the hood.
Wow,
amazing. Because everybody is accustomed to jump starting a hood under a car from under the front hood.
Sure.
And cars with batteries in the back, which there are a lot of them, still have facilities under the hood because that's what you open up and you can clamp jumper cables to.
Brilliant.
So in any case, that's how you jump start a Prius. I've done a few.
And there's a separate battery tucked away that runs the electrical engine.
It's got a little 12-volt battery to start the engine.
Interesting. All right, let's go to Pat in Willingham. Pat, you're on.
This is Pat in Wilbraham, correct?
Wilbraham, I'm sorry. Our intern's having a few issues writing down the names of towns, but we'll get it.
All righty. Hey, Gordon, the question that I had today was not about a specific vehicle. It was about gasoline. We'd had several natural disasters out in this part of the world, so we picked up a generator. And we've had some gas we picked up for this summer about 3 months ago. And I was wondering if there's any way to test to see if that gasoline was still good to use or what the expected lifetime would be if we put it in a 5-gallon jug and have it for emergencies.
Yes, that's an incredibly good question because gasoline today is going, quote, stale way faster than it used to. And it appears that the ethanol addition has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
And I don't know of any test kits out there, but if you've ever smelled stale gasoline on...
Not that I know of.
let's say you have a lawnmower or a gas can that's been put away for years. Once you've smelled that, you'll never forget it.
Mm.
And it's just a really nasty, just it's hard to describe it, but if you've ever smelled stale gas, you'll know what it smells like. What the recommendations are today with any gasoline that's stored for your generators, lawnmowers, snowblowers, all that, as soon as you buy it, put stabilizer in it. Because if you don't know how long it's going to be before you use that can of gas, there are, in some situations, some gasolines are starting to deteriorate after 2 weeks.
Wow!
That's
not acceptable.
That doesn't mean it isn't usable, but it's going downhill. And the older it gets, the less volatile it becomes, the harder it is going to be to start your engine, and then it's going to develop deposits. And if there's too much moisture in the air, it's going to get full of water. So I would put a stabilizer in it almost immediately. And anything you have with gas in it now, add the stabilizer to those tanks.
All right, Pat, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll hit the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Woodstock School of Art, presenting the Woodstock Landscape Then and Now, featuring 56 paintings by artists from Woodstock's past and present through November 2nd, woodstockschoolofart.org. Washington County Tourism, presenting the End of the Campaign, a French and Indian War encampment at Rogers Island Visitor Center, this Saturday and Sunday, washingtonnycounty.com. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing 24-hour emergency and critical care for dogs and cats every day, including all holidays. VESHDeerfield.com. Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting their first annual Founders Day concert with banjo legend Tony Trischka, tastings by sponsors Moxie Cupcake and Tuthill Town Spirits, September 21st at 7, unisonarts.org. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, the last one before the fun drive, which starts on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Hope you are with us for that. Gordon Fricke is here now to answer your automotive questions. Back to the phones we go. Kevin in Albany. Kevin, you're on.
Hi. Great show today.
Thanks.
I have a 2001 PT Cruiser, 35,000 miles on it. I only use it in the summertime. And I do something. This will be the third year that I do this. I lay the car up for the winter months in a friend's garage, and he insists that I disconnect the battery. Doesn't want a car left in the garage for any length of time that's energized. The last two winters, I've been going over once a month, connecting the battery, putting the car out in the driveway, and letting it idle for an hour. I've done that for 2 years in a row now. And in the spring, when I go to use the car, I have issues. It doesn't run right. The mixture is wrong. I've been told that by doing that, I'm screwing up the computer. Could you give me some insight on what I'm doing and if I should, what I should or should not be doing in this respect?
Sure, sure. I guess the risk of a fire is possible with the battery in the vehicle. So where you're storing the car, the guy's being good and cautious. And ideally, the battery, it's nice to take the battery out and keep it in a warm place for the winter so it doesn't stay. Is this car in an area where it's unheated?
No, it's a heated garage.
It is a heated garage, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In that case, you can. I would disconnect the battery. But I wouldn't go starting it every month. What I would do is, because you're not really, when you just park it outside and let it run for an hour, you're not really exercising anything other than you're idling the engine. And you do bring it up to operating temperature, but the idea on storing a car is put it away, put fuel stabilizer in the gas, disconnect the battery. And there are other things you can do, but those are the minimum. And then just leave it until spring and connect everything up. And there will be a short period of time where the engine doesn't run quite right because the computer has lost its parameters of fuel mixture and idling and things like that. But those relearn pretty quickly once you start driving it. So,
okay.
So you're not really harming anything. But when the battery gets disconnected, all of those basic settings and those memories and those adaptations are lost. So you just have to regain those, and they come back just by normal driving.
Just one other question. If I leave it in the garage for 5 months, I'm going to develop four big flat spots in my tires. Is that an issue that I should address? Or
it's not an issue that it was with bias ply tires, which goes back many, many years ago now. They flat spotted like crazy. Radials are not that susceptible to it. So there's two things you can do there. One, you can put more air in them than normal. Let's say the car calls for 32. The side of the tire says it can handle 40. Put like 38 in it, 40.
Mm-hmm.
And that will keep more pressure in the tires to offset that flat spotting. I've got a lot of cars that I don't drive for months at a time. And that flat spotting never seems to be a real issue. At first, the first day or two, you might feel a little bit of noise. But with modern-day tires, they seem to smooth themselves back out. The only way you could offset that would be to get the car off the ground. So now you got to jack it and block it and get the wheels and tires completely off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Kevin, thanks a lot. We appreciate it very much. You know, it's amazing that cars don't have standard good lithium battery for the computer system so that it would keep all the settings when the main battery's unhooked.
You mean like your alarm clock at
home? All sorts of things have a lithium battery that keeps settings.
Well, the car's onboard computer does use battery power 24/7 to keep all that stuff alive. It's called keep alive memory.
Yeah.
And that draws a minute amount of current. So that's why your battery will go dead on any car after a certain period of time. Keeps the clock running, the keep alive memory,
yeah,
and all the other processors in the vehicle that require that.
Okay, let's go to Pete in Long Lake. Pete, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Gordon. I'd like you to explain the proper procedure for bleeding a master cylinder of a hydraulic clutch.
Bearing in mind we have 9 minutes left. Anyway, go ahead.
Do you have a particular vehicle in question?
It's a 2004 Toyota pickup truck.
Okay. Is there a bleeder at the slave unit that's down on the transmission? Okay.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. And have you been unsuccessful at bleeding that?
It's my brother-in-law helped me, and he's got his own ideas, and I've got my own ideas of how it should be done, but we did it his way since he was helping me. He was good enough to help me,
right.
So I did it his way. But the thing is, I have more free play in the pedal than I did before I changed the master cylinder.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me give you a method. The first one is to make sure that all the air is out of it by using the bleeder on the master cylinder that's down on the transmission.
Right.
And you can have somebody in the vehicle pump up and hold the clutch pedal to the floor, and then you open up the bleeder and it squirts out a little bit. After
okay.
you've done that a bunch of times, you'll still have a bad pedal. So making sure that the master cylinder is full, you now pump that clutch pedal 10 to 20 times in succession. You know, boom, 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 boom.
Right.
A bunch of times, and then wait a few minutes and just keep doing that. Believe it or not, years ago, Saturn had a procedure, and they would tell you, they didn't have a bleeder on their systems, I don't believe, and you just hammered the air out of it by pumping that pedal rapidly and waiting and pumping and waiting. And you
right.
need to do that a whole bunch of times. I've bled a bunch of brake clutch systems that way without even cracking the bleeder. So I think that would be your next step.
Yeah, we completed the first step, but the second step we didn't do.
Yeah, do that, and I think you may find it's going to take you a while, but I think you'll find that pedal's going to get better.
Yeah, it works the way it is. It's fine, but I just felt like there should be less free play in the pedal.
Yeah.
But thank you. You have answered my question.
Okay.
Pete, thanks a lot for the call. That's what we're here to do. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We go to Fred. Fred, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Greenfield Park down in Sullivan County.
All right. Nice to have you with us. You're on with Gordon Fricke.
Okay. One quick thing for a previous caller. There is something ethanol called ethanol shield that claims an ounce per gallon will stabilize fuel for up to 3 years. So if it does half as well as that, it's good.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Definitely use those products. It'll never last 3 years, but it's better than not doing anything to it for sure.
Absolutely. And it might maybe a good idea to put it in the gas and run the car before you put it up for the winter,
yeah.
too.
Yep.
Here's a really serious problem. And by the way, you really do know your stuff. I've worked on cars for 30 years and just stopped recently. But I have a 2005 Toyota pickup, a Tacoma, a small one, a four-cylinder standard power steering. The power steering rack has started to seize up while I'm driving. First a few hard spots, and then just recently going down a straightaway, could barely turn the wheel 10 degrees one way or the other. And I hear someone went online and investigated that, and they said it's a common problem with 2005, 2006 Toyota pickups, and there's no recall. So what do you think's happening?
Well, this is what I would first rule out. Because we do this a lot, and it's not really specific to any particular car. Some do it more than others, but there's going to be a universal joint that connects the steering shaft to the steering rack, allows the turning shaft to make a corner.
Right.
That universal joint tends to seize a lot because of the weather we have up here with the salt on the roads in the winter.
It isn't that. It's
an internal rack issue.
Yeah, it's internal. And I did put, I wanted to hear what you said first, but there is a product Lucas makes to eliminate tight steering and hard spots and this and that. And I siphoned out some of the fluid and put some of that in, and so far it's cured it.
Yeah,
so,
I was just going to say, short of replacing the rack, certainly try an additive.
Right.
But I just wanted to make sure you weren't getting a sticking U-joint that's giving you hard steering before it even gets to the rack.
Right.
That U-joint's something to be concerned with on a lot of cars. But
a condition like that, like a rack seizing up, why wouldn't there be a recall on that? I mean, that's a dangerous situation.
Well, the way recalls work is they have to be safety-related, which, of course, steering is.
Yeah.
But it has to be proven that enough cases are out there to warrant the recall. It's a big process. You know, it sounds really easy, just recall them, but and the car makers are reluctant to do a recall until there's really a need for it. So, but
well,
I think the
dealer price for replacing the rack is like $2,200. The rack is only $250.
Yeah, it's a nasty repair job for sure.
The four-wheel drive it is.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, Gordon. You're always on the money.
Thank you.
Fred, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, rack, I think my wife's van had to have
the
rack replaced.
I remember
that. That was a lot of fun. And we just got finished paying for it. Maria in Ulster. Maria, you're up.
Hi. I have a question that's relevant to both myself and a friend. Often, if you have a second car, or even if you have one you don't drive a lot, it sits without being driven, as the previous person talked about. But my question is this. Different experts over the course of my life have told me different theories about how the car battery recharges itself. Obviously, if you're driving it, it's going to recharge. But my brother-in-law, who's a mechanic, said that just idling it will make it recharge. But my girlfriend tried that, at just idling it, not driving it, and she had a problem. And also, I've heard from other people that idling it is not as good as driving it in terms of recharging the battery. So what do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, if you have a dead battery and you jump start your car,
mm-hmm.
it's asking a lot of your alternator to recharge that dead battery. It'll do it, but it makes it hot and it doesn't like it. Ordinarily, the alternator is maintaining the battery's state of charge while you're driving, and the faster it spins, the better a job it does. At idle, it's the least effective.
Uh-huh.
So it is correct that at idle, you're going to get the least charging ability out of your alternator. But
is that also true if the battery's not dead?
If the battery is not dead, at idle, your alternator will certainly keep up with it. But if it's wintertime and everything is on, mm-hmm. defroster, window defroster, full heat, all the accessories, you can reach a point where the car may want more current than the alternator can produce. But you're not usually idling for hours on end unless you're in a traffic jam. So that,
well, she was doing this as a way of recharge. She thought it was a way to recharge the battery. She would drive her old Buick to the train station, leave it there for 4 days, take a train into the city, come back, then drive it, and then leave it sit. But then it would sit for weeks, and so she would go out to recharge it, and she would just idle it for a couple of hours without driving it.
Yeah, I mean, you can do
it. It's better than nothing,
It's better than nothing, but it can be a little tough on the alternator, but... But it will work, yes.
Oh, so idling for long periods of time, not good for your alternator?
Well, that's if you're trying to charge a dead battery or if you're idling for hours with a bunch of accessories on. Because it's not spinning that fast and it's not cooling itself as well as it should.
Okay.
Right. Well, so, the other part is, there is another part to this. Hello?
Yeah, we have about a minute. Oh. Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, real quick. So she's brought it to several. Her battery's been going dead on and off since last winter, and she did get a new battery in the spring. She brought it to several mechanics, and nobody could say anything more than that there was some drain on the battery, but they didn't know what.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was because she was doing this trick of trying to idle it to get it to recharge, but that now they're saying that some crazy thing with a misworking, a broken seatbelt, is causing this strange drain, but it doesn't make any sense. Why would a seatbelt cause a battery drain?
Yeah, they're thinking there's a current draw there, but they can't tell where it is. And unfortunately,
right.
It's one of those things that you have to dig in and eliminate a lot of causes. So it's not an easy one.
Does the seatbelt thing, I can imagine, but does the seatbelt seem like it makes any sense?
I don't think so, not with the key off and the engine not running.
And Maria, that's where we will have to leave it. Okay. I apologize for cutting you short, but we are out of time. Gordon Fricke, a splendid job, old boy. We'll see you after the fun drive at some point.
Yes, good luck with that.
Thank you very much, and thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger, local Hudson Valley apples and vegetables, Adam-grown mums, and more, adamsfarms.com. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. Ashokan Center, Olive Bridge, New York, a classroom in the wild, helping schools, organizations, and individuals reconnect with nature, history, and the arts, ashokancenter.org, at Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionxleyecare.com. Thanks again for being with us today. Thanks to Gordon Fricke of Barber and Fricke in Hudson Falls, New York. Hoosick Falls. What is it now? It's either Hoosick or Hudson or Hudson Hoosick. Okay, or Garden. It's Hoosick Falls, and he's Gordon Fricke. I'm sure of that. Zach Malloy is over there at the controls. I'm sure of that. Patrick Garrett answered the phones. I'm reasonably sure of that. Jessica Blaustein Marshall is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Again, reasonably sure of that. Tomorrow, it's Moyers and Company. Next week, it's the Fun Drive. Be with us and make your pledge online right now, wamc.org. Feed the lockbox. We'll see you.